He said Proverbs 31. My message is going to come from a verse in Proverbs chapter 30. If you were to ever try to figure out how much you owe your mother, what could you ever come up with? How could you ever say, I owe her this and stop with that? I read something this last week. It's 25 reasons I owe my mother. I'm going to give you 13. My mother taught me to appreciate a job well done. She used to say, if you're going to kill each other, do it outside. I just finished cleaning. My mother taught me religion. She used to say, you better pray that will come out of the carpet. My mother taught me logic. She used to say, because I said so, that's why. My mother taught me foresight. She used to say, make sure you wear clean underwear in case you're in an accident. My mother taught me irony. She used to say, keep crying and I'll give you something to cry about. My mother taught me about the science of osmosis. She used to say, shut your mouth and eat your supper. I'd have people raise your hands if you've ever heard any of these. I've heard this one. My mother taught me about contortionism. She used to say, will you look at that dirt on the back of your neck? My mother taught me about weather. She used to say, this room of yours looks as if a tornado went through it. She used to teach me about anticipation. She used to say, just wait till we get home. My mother taught me humor. She used to say, when that lawnmower cuts off your toes, don't come running to me. My mother taught me how to become an adult. She used to say, if you don't eat your vegetables, you'll never grow up. My mother taught me genetics. She used to say, you're just like your father. And here's the best and the last. My mother taught me about justice. She used to say, one day you'll have kids and I hope they turn out just like you. So yes, we owe mothers quite a bit. And there's 13 reasons why we do. But we owe mothers more than money. And we owe them more than taking them out to eat. We owe them more than simple obedience. According to the Bible, we owe our mothers honor. The fifth of the Ten Commandments says, honor thy father and thy mother. We often forget that that doesn't say obey. Obedience is involved in honor. But honor means that I do so with a good attitude. Honor your father and your mother. Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, says, this is the first commandment with promise. And what is the promise? That your days may be long. It's not a guarantee that if you have honored your parents that you are guaranteed a long life. But more than not, you're going to have a long life. We read in Proverbs 31 this morning that her children arise up and call her, what? Blessed. They call her blessed. That word blessed is the Hebrew word that has to do with being happy, blissful. We read what a mother does who is called blessed. And any time we read that, there's no mother who can say, oh, I meet all those qualifications. And yet I know mothers who certainly strive. That kind of a mother is happy. She's blissful. In fact, I read that it is a word of congratulation for something well done. And the word book that described that word blessed goes on to say that it has to do with somebody who is envied. It is a word that is never used of God blessing a man because God never envies a man. But it's used of children for their mother. In a sense of an envy of desire. That you are blessed and others envy you. Other mothers envy you. From that verse in Proverbs 31:28, I want to point out two things. Such a woman, as is described in Proverbs 31, is a woman who has children. Mother's Day is more and more becoming Women's Day. You may not know that, but as I look for Mother's Day gifts, You know, to pass out in a service for the mothers, you know what are what is becoming more and more prevalent is women of God. Or bless the women. But we're looking at mothers here. And it goes on to say in that verse, her children arise up and call her blessed. So a woman such as this is a mother whose children call her blessed. That's not every mother, folks. But one who has biblical virtues, because it says there in verse 10 of chapter 31, who can find a virtuous woman? I want to say this about the Proverbs 31 woman. She may not get her congratulations from this world. But that kind of woman doesn't care. She lives in the hopes that one day her children will rise up and call her blessed, happy, blissful. Whether the feminists say it doesn't bother her. Whether the government recognizes her doesn't bother her. One day her children will rise up and call her blessed. But I told you I was going to preach out of Proverbs chapter 30. And I'd like you to go back to Proverbs chapter 30. And I would like to read verse 11. There is a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. Have you ever seen that verse in the book, in the Bible? There is a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. Now that word bless there is a different word. It's not the word we saw in Proverbs 31 where her children arise up and call her blessed. This is a word that is the opposite of curse. There is a generation who curses their father and basically curses their mother. It's the Hebrew word berek. That's we named our son Berek, blessing. Rather than a congratulation, it's not saying that these children, this generation is not congratulating their mother. That is a word that says has to do with a benediction. It is children, a generation who do not say to their mothers, may you be blessed. It's contrast with cursed. They do not express thanks. They do not express praise to their mother. This is somewhat of an unusual Mother's Day message in the fact that I am not going to challenge mothers as I have for the past 13 years. Today I am challenging others about your mothers. I am going to be talking to this generation. We live in a generation, folks, that does not bless their mother. It goes on to say, look at verse 12. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. They are self-righteous. They have a high opinion of themselves. They have a high opinion of their own character. But it says right there in the last part of verse 12, they're not washed from their filthiness. They think they are, but they're not. Let's call it self-esteem. Have you ever seen a plague more prevalent than today's self-esteem society, where everybody's concerned about how people feel about themselves rather than how people feel about others? Self-righteous, self-esteem, that's this generation. Verse 13, there is a generation. Oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. This is a self-exalting generation. They look with disdain upon others. Verse 14 shows us that it is a self-centered generation. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. Under the guise of helping others, they really devour the poor and the needy. That describes this generation. This generation that does not bless their mother. I am simply passing over the part where it says they curse their father, because we're talking about mothers today. This is a generation that does not bless their mother. Please turn in your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 5. My outline will come from this chapter, chapters 5 and 6, but I will be making many references back to the book of Proverbs. There are three groups mentioned in Ephesians 5 and 6 that should be going against this generation that does not bless their mothers. In other words, there are three groups of people in Ephesians 5 and 6 who, regardless of this generation, should be blessing their mothers, praising and thanking God for their mothers. And as I always like to do, I have alliterated this. Surprised? I want us to go to Ephesians chapter 5 and look at verse 23. For it says there, "For the husband is the head of the wife." Here's the first group. I'm going to call him the chief. The chief. The husband. The father. He is the head. He is the chief. I thought of that word chief because somebody once gave me a mug. I led a drama team years ago, and one of the guys on the team from the get-go, since I was the leader of the team, he called me chief. Even today, when we talk, he says, "Hey, chief." When he emails me, it's always chief. And so that's the word that came to mind. So he gave me a mug once that has all the names of a leader, chief, supervisor, manager, and so forth and so on. That's the father. That's the husband. He is the chief. He is the leader. And that is because of the order of creation. 1 Timothy 2:13 says, "For Adam was first formed, then Eve." Dads, I am speaking to you now. I am speaking to husbands. I am not preaching to mothers. I am preaching to fathers. You are to be the chief. Ephesians 5:23 says, "The husband is the head of the wife." He is the chief. I know this is not popular preaching in our society today. It doesn't make any difference. It's the Bible. The husband is to be the leader. The previous verse in 1 Timothy 2 says, "But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man." Folks, this generation of chiefs should bless their mother. The condition of motherhood is in its condition today due to the condition of manhood. Men have become feminized. Men have become sissies. Men have become girly men, intimidated by women. And this is not an intimidation to women by my saying this. I'm just saying that men today are becoming intimidated by women. It used to be fighting words if another guy would call another guy a sissy. Man, they'd be taking their jackets off. And they'd say, "You're not going to call me that." They'd put up their dukes and they'd get into it. But today it's almost an honor if you're effeminate, if you have a limp wrist, that you have a swaggering hip, and if you have a lisp on your lips. It's almost a badge of honor. How sad that that's the society we live in, that that's the kind of men that we have. Men have relinquished their responsibility as being the chief, and thus mothers have ceased to become respected. And it's due to the condition of manhood. Please listen as I read 1 Peter 3:7. "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel." What happens because the woman is the weaker vessel? Does the man step on her? No, he gives honor to her. That's what the verse says. "Giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." This is a generation that does not bless their mothers. This is a generation of men who no longer open doors for their wives, where children no longer open the doors for their mothers. Because today we say, "Oh, that was years ago." That's that Victorian type society. We're advanced. Gentlemen, the best thing you can provide your children is a godly husband to their mother. We typically think that if I go out and buy something, if I take them places, if I make memories for my children, that's going to be the best thing for them. No, the best thing you can provide for them is being a godly husband. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, "But if any provide not for his own and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith. He is worse than an infidel." It's talking about providing, yes, physically, but also providing spiritually. Being the chief you ought to be. The fact that women today have had to take positions of leadership is a reflection upon men. You go back into the Bible and you read about women who have had to take positions of leadership because men were sitting in the background doing nothing. Have you ever heard of a man by the name of Sisera? You ever heard of a woman by the name of Deborah? Her song is found in Judges chapter 4, where Sisera, in her song, Sisera, the man, the warrior, was given into the hands of a woman. Isaiah 19:16 talks about Egyptians who will become like women. Nahum 3:13 talks about your troops will be like women. Jeremiah 31:22 is where the prophet talks about a woman who is protecting a man. And it's a reflection upon the men. That's the reason it's being said there in those passages, that you men are not taking the leadership. You are not taking a stand. You are not coming out in the front. And you are not being the husbands and the fathers you need to be in the home, in the church, in the government. This generation of chiefs does not bless their mother. And as a result, neither does, number two, the church. Neither does the church. This generation of churches does not bless their mother. As goes the chief, so goes the church. And folks, as goes the church, so goes the nation. Why is our nation in the condition it is today? Because of the church. And why is the church in the condition it's in? Because of the chiefs. What we're seeing happening in our nation is simply a reflection of what is happening in a majority of our churches. There is so much being done to degrade mothers under the guise of giving women rights. Tell you what, abortion is degrading. Abortion is a sad reflection on our society. It's the scourge of motherhood. Not only is it practiced, it is today promoted. The murder of children. What should characterize churches? You're in Ephesians. Turn a few books later to Titus. This is what should be characterizing churches. Because Paul is writing to a pastor by the name of Titus. And he is saying, Titus, here's what I'm going to command you to teach, the following things. Look at Titus chapter 2. Verse 1, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity and patience. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things." Now, look at verse 4. "That they may teach the young women." Here's what the older women in church are supposed to be teaching the young women: to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. That is what the older women are to be teaching the younger women in the church. That's what should be done in churches. But today, young ladies are growing up thinking that if I don't have some kind of a career, that I am second rate. And this isn't to say that ladies shouldn't have a career, but I'm saying that it is going over the top. I remember, as registrar at Bob Jones University, one day a young lady came in. She was struggling with her major. I said, "Well, what's your major?" She said, "I'm a nursing major." I said, "What's your problem?" She says, "I'm making D's. I'm making F's." I said, "In which courses? In chemistry and in science." I said, "I don't want you working on me one day. Why are you in nursing?" And she didn't want to tell me. And I said, "Well, the only way I can help you is if I get the truth here. We can decide this thing." She finally said, "You know what? I'm in nursing because my mom wants me to. All of my life, my mom has wanted me to be a nurse, and I'm here because my mom wants me to be a nurse." And she started to cry. And as she cried, she said, "All I want to do is get married, have a family, and raise them for the Lord." Now, in any other school, what would the registrar would have done? "What an idiot. Pick yourself up off the floor." I said, "Praise God. Thank the Lord. If that's your desire, then that's what you need to pursue." Now, here's a major that will help you. But we have a society that looks at that and degrades that. I was reading an article some time ago entitled, "Does Motherhood Mean Anything?" You may remember this. This happened a couple of years ago. It's when Iran scored a huge publicity coup in the capture and release of 15 British sailors and Royal Marines. Do you remember that? Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad played the media like a musical instrument, greeting the captives just prior to their release. The Muslim world loved it. Tragically, the most damaging element of Ahmadinejad's media triumph was handed to him by the Royal Navy in the person of leading seaman Faye Turney, the only woman among the captives and the mother of a 3-year-old daughter. Her presence among the captives taken from the British patrol vessel gave Ahmadinejad the opportunity to make this observation, quote, "You will know that among the detainees there is one lady who is a mother of a child. Why is that the most difficult work, like patrolling at sea? Why should that be given to a woman? Why is there no respect for motherhood? Why does the West not value its women?" Ahmadinejad says. His questions still reverberate around the Muslim world. Nothing could more effectively demonstrate the immorality of Western values before Muslim eyes than this: a mother of a little girl sent as a warrior. As somebody commented in the Washington Post, on any given day, one isn't likely to find common cause with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He's a dangerous, lying, Holocaust-denying, Jew-hating, cutthroat thug, not to put too fine a point on it. But he was dead on when he wondered why a once great power such as Britain sends mothers of toddlers to fight its battles. As a reflection, ladies and gentlemen, on our society, because that is a reflection on our churches, which is a reflection on the men. I today want to honor my mother, who no longer is living. My mother, who as a young child wanted to one day become a missionary. But she got married, had 8 children, and wondered whatever happened to that desire to be a missionary. But she has 3 sons in the ministry today. And she once said, "That was my responsibility, was to raise children for the work of the Lord." Thank God for my wife, and I'm not trying to embarrass her, but there's a mother who is to be blessed. This generation of churches, folks, does not bless their mother because the chiefs don't. No wonder, then, that neither do the children. This is a generation of children that does not bless their mother. Now, children, I've been talking to the chiefs. I've been talking to the church, but now I'm talking to the children. And all of us are children. Children need to know, and I have 7 things here. Number 1, children need to know that undisciplined children bring shame. Undisciplined children bring shame. Listen to Proverbs 29:15. "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." The rod and reproof give wisdom. What is the rod? Exactly what it says. It is a rod. It is an instrument to be used for corporal punishment. Undisciplined children bring shame. Secondly, foolish children bring heaviness and bitterness. Children, you want to know how you're affecting your mom? Listen. A foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Proverbs 10:1. A foolish man despiseth his mother. Proverbs 15:20. A foolish son is bitterness to her that bare him. Proverbs 17:25. Children, are you listening to me? Because foolish children bring heaviness and bitterness. Thirdly, disrespect of mothers is shameful. If you disrespect your mom, it is shameful. If you mouth back at your mother, that is shameful. If you show her disrespect, it is shameful. He that chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. Proverbs 19:26. Whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith, it is no transgression, the same is the companion of a destroyer. Proverbs 28:24. You see, I don't rob my parents. You may not be robbing them of money, but you may be robbing them of much more. You may be robbing them of joy. You may be robbing them of many other things. And the Bible says, if you do that, you are the companion of a destroyer. So undisciplined children bring shame. Foolish children bring heaviness and bitterness. The disrespect of mothers is shameful. The disrespect of mothers is punished. Proverbs 20:20, whoso curseth his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out in obscure darkness. Proverbs 30:17, the eye that despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it. What are we talking about here? That children who disrespect their mothers will be punished, if not by the mother or by the father as it ought to be. God will take care of it. Deuteronomy 27:16, cursed be he that dishonors his father or his mother. And all the people shall say, amen. I don't usually ask for amens, but you could put one right there. Here's the seriousness of disrespect of mothers. Leviticus 20:9, for everyone that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He hath cursed his father or his mother. His blood shall be upon him. Now, we don't do that today, but I want you to note something. God saw the seriousness of it for the nation of Israel as the God of Israel when they were in a theocracy, that if it would ever happen that a child would ever curse his mother, they were to take that child and they were to put him to death. That's what God thinks about disrespect and disobedience of children to their mothers. Are you listening, children? That's the seriousness of it. And you say, well, I'm going to get by with it. Then you are not honoring your father and your mother, and you will pay for it in more ways than one. Disrespect of mothers is punished. Disobedience of mothers is punished. Here's an often overlooked passage. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 21. Here's the seriousness of disrespect and disobedience. Deuteronomy 21. Again, we do not practice this today. We are not in a theocracy. But this does show how seriously God takes disobedience of children. Deuteronomy 21:18. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken to them. So here's a disobedient son. He's a rebel. The parents have chastened him. They've used the rod. And he still will not hearken unto them. Verse 19, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard, and all the men of his city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Do you think if that ever happened, that any other kid would start disobeying? I don't think so. Now, there's no record of this ever having to happen. And probably, perhaps because the children knew that the possibility was there. So the disobedience of mothers is punished. Sixthly, righteous children bring joy. Proverbs 23:25 says, "The father and mother of the righteous shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice." Let me ask you children something. Does your mom rejoice over your respect and your obedience to her? Seventh, disciplined children bring delight. Proverbs 29:17, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul." Now, there is a responsibility for the mothers and the fathers. But the ball lands first, dads, in the court of the chief. It is the responsibility of the fathers to be the disciplinarian. It's not the father who leaves it to the mother to do the disciplining. She is part of it, but he is ultimately responsible. In closing, go with me to Proverbs chapter 1. Because we were looking at foolish children and unwise children. Here's where it all begins. Proverbs 1:7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck." One of the things that I used to really dread as a child were the lectures I would get, or my brothers and I would get when my mom got on her teaching pedestal. Because I knew I would not be out playing basketball, I would not be out riding horse, I would not be doing anything for the next hour. Because once she got something in her little teaching craw, we were there and we were to sit there and we had to listen. And she would go on and on and on. And I thought, you've said that once. Now you've said it twice. Now you've said it three times. And one time I made the mistake of yawning. And so then it went on for another hour. Because she says, "Don't you ever yawn while I'm speaking to you." And you know my sweet mother. But she would bring up verses like this, "Forsake not the law of thy mother." And today as I look back, I thank God for my mom and for the law instilled. But folks, there is a generation that doth not bless their mother. It need not describe every member of this generation, because we at Westside Baptist Church as believers should be an exception. When I see a child disrespect a mom here in church, it takes all I have to hold back. But that's the responsibility of the parents to take care of it. I have often wanted people who had undisciplined children to say, "Let me have them for a week. Let me have them." People have said, "Would you babysit our children?" My wife has done it. And the child was a terror for the first little bit. But after a while, the child was so well behaved. And then the mother would come back and all hell would break loose all over again. Because there was no discipline. There was no love. Because that's what discipline is. So this need not describe every member of this generation. We should be the exception. Folks, but it is easy for us to be swept well along with the crowd. To look at the government as our mother. As the nanny. It is easy for the chiefs to surrender the responsibility of leadership, because leadership is work. It is easy for the church to adopt non-scriptural attitudes and positions that other churches have adopted. It is easy for children to act like other children. But you see, we owe our mothers more than money, more than obedience. We owe them honor. The greatest gift that the chief, that the church, and the child can give to the mother is to love the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, and mind. What a gift that would be to your mother. To love God. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes?